If it pleases the court.
Certainly.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brad Winters for the relator, counsel. Your Honors, there's no dispute that a party presenting an expert witness trial waives the work product privilege as to that witness. Citrix versus Franklin and the Tracy case that we'll discuss in a moment says that this is to allow the other side the opportunity to intelligently explore and cross-examine and test the expert's opinions. The narrow issue, however, that the court has permitted us to present today is an important and straightforward one, and that is, may a party who has identified an expert witness withdraw that expert witness? Once designated, can the witness be de-designated? The orders entered below by the respondent judge that bring us here today say that once designated, the expert may not be de-designated. But the decisions of this court, every time this court has addressed and provided guidance to inferior courts and to counsel alike on this very issue, say that a designated expert may be de-designated, may be withdrawn.
Let me ask you about that.
Yes, sir.
Let's suppose that instead of the time that you did it, that you're going in, you're in a deposition and things start going south and you say, I need to take a break. And you come back and you hand over the amended interrogatory. We hereby undesignate our expert. We don't intend to call him at trial. Does it stop right there?
Well, hard question, Your Honor, because I guess it depends during the deposition where we are.
Well, let's assume that, you haven't disclosed any information, that the witness gives one bad answer that you don't like and you see things going south. So just as a matter of strategy, you say, take a break, we're done, I hereby, and I've talked to him, I no longer designate him as my trial expert.
I think probably not at that point, Your Honor, because in the cases the courts have identified sort of the three disclosing events, as the court described them in American Economy. One is the deposition of the expert, one is disclosing the opinions and interrogatories, and one, I guess going back to Brown versus Hamid, was allowing or a permissible ex parte communication with the expert where the actual opinion was disclosed. But in terms of when during the deposition, I would say that if the expert is provided for deposition, his file will have been provided at that point. I believe the privilege would have been waived at that point. Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll dial the clock back 15 minutes. You have your pre-deposition meeting. And
I'm sorry, I can
yeah, excuse
sorry,
me.
Pardon me.
I'll dial the clock back about 15 minutes then. You have your pre-deposition meeting with your expert.
Yes.
And during that conversation, something comes up which changes your mind about whether or not it's best for your client to depose him. So you go in and say, I understand, we're all here today. I've had some discussions with him. I've decided I'm just going to use him as a consultant, and I'm going to amend my designations tomorrow. Or if I need to, I can do it now on the record that I'm no longer considering him a trial expert. Is that too late?
Is that what?
Right before the deposition. Oh. You have a pre-deposition, you're the last little prep, and your expert says something you don't like, and you go in there and say, I undesignate him. We haven't started yet.
Not too late at all. In fact, Your Honor, that was the situation, or at least the situation discussed by this court in the Tracy case. Because in Tracy, the expert was designated. He was put up for deposition. The deposition was taken. During that deposition, I guess unbeknownst to the party presenting the expert, confidential or attorney-client work product documents were handed to the side questioning the expert. The court said, well, at that point, you can't have those documents back. But that's where the court did say, in Tracy specifically, that the expert is wholly in the control of the party who retained him. The attorney had the option to withdraw the expert's designation prior to deposition. The attorney can claim work product protection as to that retained expert, since the expert will not be called for trial. And I think you've raised one of the important scenarios where the rule as articulated by this court is a benefit to counsel, is where this unusual situation where a party designates an expert, doesn't disclose their opinion, and then wishes to de-designate him. Because that was exactly the situation in Tracy. The designating party realized after the deposition that there were documents handed to questioning counsel. And he said, I want those back. And the court said, no, no, no. At that point, the bell had rung. It can't be unrung. You can't have those documents back. But it said, but what you could have done was de-designate, because then the work product privilege would have reattached or would have remained intact.
What if you had already sent his report or her report to opposing counsel and so forth prior to the deposition? Is that a separate disclosing event? That
yes. And it was the disclosing event in American Economy. And frankly, Your Honor, it's the disclosing event in our case for three of our four experts. And the panel knows the cases I'm going to be talking about. So let me jump to what the facts here, because each of these cases turns on the facts. The law is the same in all of them, and that is that waiving the privilege is a two-step process. An American Economy says that designating the expert starts the process and disclosing the opinions ends the process. That's when the work product privilege is waived. So in our case, what happened was we designated four experts, and we knew we were going to use three of them, and we were unsure about one, the one that's at issue here. For the three that we designated, we followed 5601B3, and we gave everything in terms of curriculum vitae and so on, and B4, we gave the opinions for those three experts. For Ms. Hoffman, we said that the product caused or contributed to cause the injuries, that Jason, the plaintiff's injuries, are consistent with contact. For our second expert, Mr. Rosenbluth, we said he will testify the product is defective. He will testify that the product will strike the ground, will cause injuries. In fact, we said in our designation that expert Rosenbluth would say that the defendant was negligent. For our third expert, for Dr. Kunitz, we said that he will testify that the plaintiff was acting naturally, reflexively, and foreseeably, and he will testify that the instructions and warnings were inadequate. We gave the opinions, but with the expert that brings us here today, Mr. Newbold, who we weren't sure we wanted to use, we did it very differently. We followed 5601B3 to the letter, and we described only the general nature of the testimony he was going to be giving. We said he would talk about the range of speeds. He would talk about the forces created. He would talk about the performance factors impacting performance. These are not opinions, Your Honor. In fact, in a formal courtroom, these are foundation for opinions.
And your argument is that if that was sufficient, that every time you followed the rule and designated experts, there'd be no second half of the test.
Exactly. That's precisely it. That if there, as we suggest in the brief, it begs the question, if designating the expert starts the process, how can it also be the process? There has to be something more. And for three of our experts, there was something more. We intentionally designated by deposition because there's no magic, by interrogatory. There's no magic to depositions. It's just a disclosing event where you report for these designated experts, we are now disclosing their opinions. Interrogatories, deposition testimony, or in the Brown versus Hamid case, a permissible ex parte communication. It's disclosed. But again, for our third expert, or for the fourth expert that brings us here, we gave only sort of the foundation questions, the area. So if we said he'll testify about the range of speeds, and in a formal courtroom, sir, do you have an opinion about the range of speeds? Yes, I do. Please state your opinion. We said he would testify about the forces created, its foundation. Sir, do you have an opinion about the force? Yes, I do. What is that opinion? And again, it's foundation for an opinion, not the opinion. And we were careful to follow the rules and the case directions as we read them. And as the Tracy opinion points out, or as the Crown opinion points out, it's important for counsel and to have good guidance. And in good faith, Your Honors, we follow that good guidance. You know, I don't presume to guess what was on the minds of the respondent when he made the order. But I think the issue is that there's no question that designating an expert and putting an expert on for a trial you're waiving the privilege. And in the overwhelming majority of cases, it involves somebody who's done these things, who's designated and disclosed, and then wants something back. I want those documents back. I don't want to have him testify about this. This is that narrow issue, that narrow question, which is, at what point can I not take him back? Or can I not take her back? Can I not de-designate this expert? A party settles, or several parties settle, or I find documents in the file and I go, oh my goodness, I cannot, I've got to make the decision. Because under the rules, the price that we as lawyers pay for designating and disclosing and then offering an expert witness is that we have to open up their files. And anything in their files and anything we've given them, communications, the work product privilege is waived. That's a price we pay, but we know we're going to pay it. At some point, though, we get to make the decision as to when a consulting expert, an expert who perhaps we've taken to destructive testing, or we've taken to a scene inspection, or we've taken to an autopsy, somewhere we say, give it to me completely straight. I want the unvarnished story because I want to understand the merits of my case. If it's no good, I don't want to pursue it. If it's good, I do. Help me handicap it. And if at some point I decide that this is a person whose testimony I want to present, I can start the process articulated in American Economy, which is designation, the process which is completed, Your Honors, by disclosure. You will hear there's a reference in the brief of the respondents about the bell being rung. Once rung, it can't be unrung. But that, I'll remind you, that was the Tracy case. And each of these cases is unique and individual. And there, witness was designated, expert opinions disclosed at deposition, documents handed over. Indeed, there, the bell was rung, and it cannot be unrung. The question is, when does the bell ring? And as the court has said, witnesses designated may be de-designated.
We'll hear from you on rebuttal. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
May it please the court?
Certainly.
Your Honors, it is our position that the respondent correctly ruled in this case, not once, but twice, that the realtor waived the work product privilege as to witness Herbert Newbold. As a result, the respondent, the Honorable Michael T. Jamison from the Circuit Court of St. Louis County, his orders must stand, and this court should deny the relief requested by the realtor. The respondent did not abuse his discretion in entering the discovery orders dated December 15th of 2015 and March 14th, 2016. We believe the orders must stand for two reasons. Number one, the realtor waived the work product privilege when Mr. Newbold was designated as a retained expert witness pursuant to Rule 56.01b4 because the Missouri Rules of Civil Procedure, they do not require both a designation and a disclosure or this disclosing event in order to be subject to the rules of discovery. Second, the realtor
counsel, so everybody who complies with the rule and lists an expert can never de-designate?
It's our position that the rules are clear. Once that expert is designated pursuant to the rule, that person is subject to the rules of discovery.
So what about our cases that talk about that you can de-designate and that it's because of their disclosing event and that begins the process and then the disclosure completes it? Do we have to overrule those cases to rule in your favor?
Well, I think, and if you're referring to American Economy, I think that American Economy is directly on point with this case because in that case, the expert was designated, there was no deposition, and then the court found that it was the designation that was the triggering event. And so I think that American Economy is consistent with the trial court's orders in this case as well.
American Economy says this designation of an expert as a trial witness begins the process of waiving the privilege.
Correct.
And then it was the ex parte contact in that case that caused disclosure. And they said because the disclosing event already took place through discovery in the earlier case, you didn't need to have a deposition. So there had to be some sort of disclosure. What was the disclosure here?
Well, Your Honor, and it's our position that if you believe that there must be a disclosing event, I do believe that the disclosing event then in this case was also the fact that the designation of Mr. Newbold provides his general nature of his opinions in this case.
It provides the subject of his opinion, but not what his opinions were.
I would agree that there are no detailed specific opinions in the disclosure, but there are the summary of the general nature of his opinions that would be obviously expounded upon in his deposition.
How do you think he was going to testify? What was he going to say?
Well, I would love the opportunity to find out, but I do believe that
that's kind of the question. Why do you need to find out if he has now said he's not going to call this expert?
Because, and I think that's a very important question, and I think that what is interesting too is one of these opinions or the subject matters that Mr. Newbold was supposed to testify to. It's ironic that when he was de-endorsed, part of those opinions were then included in a revised designation of Mr. Rosenbluth. And so, but it's important, Mr. Newbold is critical in this case too, because he's the only expert who actually drove this Ranger, performed an inspection, and drove this Ranger, performed all this testing on the path where this accident happened. After that testing, after he did that, this Ranger was moved to Colorado, and no person has been able to drive it. So he has some crucial evidence and underlying facts.
You could make a motion, and the trial court could address whether or not these are special circumstances that waive work product. That's a different issue.
Exactly, and that's why that hasn't been argued or briefed, because the trial court went in our favor.
But you know, if the law were what you're arguing, it seems to me all these cases would have been really short. They would have said, you listed this guy as an expert in compliance with the rules, so you can't decertify, period. One paragraph decision, but they didn't. They talked about a lot more issues and about disclosure. So just complying with our rules by listing the subject matter on which they'll testify, if that were sufficient, as you're arguing, why was all this, everything else talked about? Why don't we just say, once you designate, that's it?
Right, and I understand that. But I do think that this court in American Economy clearly said that, you know, upon designation, that begins the waiver of the privilege.
It begins the waiver. It's not the waiver. It didn't say it's the waiver. It said it begins the waiver.
And what about Tracy? How do you reconcile your position with the holding in Tracy?
Well, in Tracy, again, I guess the facts are different in that in addition to the designation, there was the deposition of this expert and the file materials, and that's when the court said, okay, well, you know, you can't de-designate it because...
But you could prior to the deposition is what Tracy said.
Presumably.
You can claim work product privilege if the expert is pulled before deposition. So isn't that what took place here?
Right. And I think the court said presumably, I guess, they could try to withdraw. But it's our position that there's been sufficient... a designation and a disclosure, and so the work product privilege.
In Ravens, didn't this court reaffirm Tracy, though, and say in Tracy this court made clear that when an expert's mistakenly given privileged documents, the court may withdraw the expert's designation? So it was dicta in Tracy because it wasn't that situation, but it was at least reaffirmed dicta, if there's such a thing, in Ravens. I understand your argument and why you think that would be sufficient, but have we ever said designation is sufficient in and of itself?
Your Honor, I do believe that in the American Economy that the designation is the beginning of the privilege waiver and the triggering event. And I think it's important, and as Your Honor pointed out, this is going to invite more litigation as to what's a disclosing event and when does that occur. So I think it's a slippery slope. And I think that the rule is clear. There is no rule for de-designating or de-endorsing. The realtor made a conscious decision to designate this expert. And the rule says that upon designation, that expert is subject to the rules of discovery. And so that's one of the reasons that we believe the respondent correctly entered the orders in this case. I'll try and circle back to my argument. And following up on this de-endorsement or de-designation issue, we believe that had the legislature intended such a rule, it would be in this book, and it would be something that would be spelled out as far as how a party is to de-designate or de-endorse an expert witness. Here, it's our position that expert Newbolt was clearly designated and is now subject to the permissible scope of discovery as stated in the rule.
Rather than the legislature, the discovery rules are the court rules. And so the court's opinions would seemingly clarify what the court meant in adopting that rule. So I think it comes back to Judge Stiss' position. I think to sustain or to accept your position, we would have to overrule Tracy and Crown Power and Raymond.
Can you, but you
Crown
may
Power,
have good arguments
Crown
why we
Power
should.
Crown Power did not relate at all to a trial expert, correct? I mean,
I'm sorry?
Crown Power wasn't.
There was no designation.
There was no designation.
Sure.
I don't know how Crown Power has any application here.
Right.
American Economy. American Economy.
Right. So, exactly.
You may have good policy arguments why we should. You were making some just now. And did you want to expound on those?
Right. And I think that that's the concern is, you know, and I think that this was touched upon in the dissenting opinion in Crown Power by Judge Price. I mean, he touched upon that this is going to be opening, he called it expert shenanigans, as far as, you know, someone trying to de-endorse and taking the position that there's been no disclosing event. So we would suggest to the court that, you know, I do believe that American Economy still holds true in this case because in that case, there was the designation, and that's when the court held that the designation was the beginning of the privilege waiver.
I'm still stuck on why you care, okay? And setting aside the question of maybe substantial need and no alternative, and maybe you can make a subsequent motion for disclosure of otherwise work product materials, but the rule you're arguing, the interpretation of the rule that you're arguing, would incentivize the other side not to disclose until they were absolutely irretrievably certain they were going to use this witness at trial, which I think could prejudice you. But the fact that they said we may and now we're not, I'm not sure how that prejudices you.
Well, in response to that, I believe there was no question when they designated Mr. Newbolt. There was no reservation saying, well, here's our designation, but we may withdraw him. And so I do believe it should be, I think that the designation of expert is a conscious decision that us trial lawyers must make knowing the consequences. Once you designate, the rules say that expert is subject to discovery, and I think that should be.
Is it possible he could be required to be deposed but not be required to testify or reveal information that was provided to him from counsel?
This is
a person who might have, maybe a fact witness at this point.
Well, and that's a very good point, Your Honor, because when you read his disclosure, it actually states that he's expected to provide fact testimony about his inspection as well as fact and expert opinions on subject matters.
So my question is, and I was going to save it for him, but you don't get to go after him, so why shouldn't you be allowed to depose him even if you're not entitled to receive from him information that was provided by plaintiff's counsel?
Right, and I think that I guess would be our fallback position is if this court does not affirm the respondent's orders, we're going to go back to Judge Jameson and have that next battle.
That would be an issue because you always hire investigators and they don't get to depose them unless they show it's the exceptions to the work product doctrine, because if he's only a fact witness because of his investigation on behalf of one side, then he's not a fact witness. He's only a fact witness because he was assisting one party. But that's certainly, if you cannot duplicate it, then you can, and it's essential, and the other requirements for a waiver of work product are met. But the fact that they inspected the scene when you could inspect the scene doesn't mean you get to depose them about what they saw. All facts are not equal. It's facts created and learned in anticipation of litigation during the litigation process are different than a witness to an accident.
Right, I understand that. But I would reiterate that Mr. Newbold does play a crucial role in this case. And if that's something that I guess, if we need to address with Judge Jameson after this court's ruling, we'll do so. There's no dispute that Mr. Newbold was clearly designated by the realtor. And so it's our position that he should be subject to the rules of discovery, not only because he was designated, but also if there must be this disclosing event was his designation, which Judge Jameson found was substantially similar to the three other designations of the realtor's three other experts.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
What about that, Counselor? This person has facts and opinions that may be based nothing on what you provided him or so forth. I mean, why shouldn't he be subject to deposition for those things?
Two things in response to that and additional observations that have been made. First, Your Honor, 5601B4 says expressly, discovery of facts known and opinions held by experts, otherwise discoverable and acquired or developed in anticipation of litigation or for trial, may be obtained only as follows. And then it sets out how you do it in interrogatories mm-hmm. and how you do it in deposition. And right. we've discussed that and we complied with that. But the point that was asked is the right one here, which is there are procedures to get what they want that means something. I mean, Rule 56, the purpose of Rule 56 is articulated in Tracy and in Citric. Missouri cases require an expert to produce at deposition the materials that the expert has reviewed in order that the opposing attorney may be able to intelligently cross-examine the expert concerning the facts he used to formulate his opinion. You put on an expert, you've got to give the other side every opportunity to intelligently examine him. But it's not just a opportunity. The expert isn't going to testify, but we want to see what's in the file anyway, because there may be other things. The purpose of the rule is to give them a fair shot at any expert I put on. What they're asking for, though, is his files in their totality. And there's a rule. I mean, they talked about the driving that he did at the scene and the moving of the vehicle, which are true. I mean, he stored the vehicle and was made available for a day-long inspection with everybody else's, when there were multiple parties, experts there. If there's things that only he can testify about, facts only he knows, and that this can't, this, by the way, this vehicle was, the accident happened, for your information, in the first minute of ownership. It's a brand new vehicle. The site where it happened can be made available at any time. So we can have the debate, though, with Judge Jameson about, is there anything unique that this person knows? Even though he is a consulting expert, you have a basis to ask the judge for an order to get that from him. That's in the rules. We'll play on that field and have that discussion if and when presented. But otherwise, we followed the court's guidance as carefully as we possibly could in terms of disclosure in terms of designation and disclosure. For three of our experts we disclosed, for one we did not. And we asked that the court consider our good faith efforts to make sure we had the right to de-designate, the court's opinions that permit de-designation, and find that we did so properly, protect the privilege, the work product protections that are available to us, and make the writ permanent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case will be submitted.